This audience is probably very familiar with these first two lines and probably less familiar with what's known as stochastic gravity. So I'll probably spend a little bit more time explaining what this is. It's not something that's sort of concocted for some particular reason. It's really a natural outgrowth of semi-classical gravity. In the 70s, it's a lot of activities on quantum field theory in curved space-time, which is quite familiar now, quite well incorporated, in fact, in the standard curriculum. If you want to do string theory, you certainly want to know quantum field theory in curved space-time. Semi-classical gravity refers to the case wherein the source is given by the expectation value of quantum fields, the source of the Einstein equation, and it's known as the semi-classical Einstein equation. What we found out in the 90s is that it really boils down to a mean field theory, okay, the expectation value. So stochastic gravity adds on the consideration of fluctuations. So it's the effect of the fluctuations of quantum matter field source is now incorporated in what's known as an Einstein-Langevin equation. So let me just, this is basically the first two parts here. I probably won't have that much time to tell you why there is this stochastic element in it. That really was the question that not bothered me, but drew me in for quite a number of years. How could you even talk about stochasticity in an otherwise unitary theory, as a closed theory by itself? It was through influence function, though, and in fact, in analyzing some of the more basic models like quantum Brownian motion, that I understood where this stochasticity came from. Most of you here probably have gone through that, through the Feynman-Vernon path integral formulation, which I probably won't have that much time to go into. Rather, I like to just show you some application. There are about half a dozen of major applications of stochastic gravity. The one that I picked out for this conference, of course, is cosmological non-equilibrium processes, the perturbation and structure formation. Just to get the, what do you call that, punchline or whatever the bottom line is, it's not just a theory that could reproduce things that people can do with easier theories or more familiar ways. But in dealing with quadratic order perturbations, this theory, I find it to be a lot more useful than the traditional way, which is, of course, quantizing the perturbation, the linear perturbation of gravitational background, as well as, of course, the perturbation to the inflaton field. So I'll get to that point last. So let's review what semi-classical gravity is. Einstein equation, and here's the expectation value of the stress energy tensor, which of course sits on the particular background. Okay, so you see that that background, of course, is being solved in this equation, whereas the scalar, well, the quantum matter field, let's say a scalar field, would obey the Klein-Gordon equation. So you need to solve for G and phi the geometry, the metric, and the matter field self-consistently. So the back reaction problem is really at the heart of semi-classical gravity, whereas what I refer to as quantum field theory in curved space-time active in the 70s is considered as a test field approximation to this. So the back reaction problem, of course, still is a rather difficult problem that commands quite a bit of attention, and, you know, both in the context of semi-classical gravity and increasingly in analog gravity. People move to sonic black holes and look for back reaction effects to mimic the black hole situation. Now, the semi-classical Einstein equation, after renormalization, well, because in this case, well, a good part of the 70s, people, including myself and quite a few of us here, spent quite a bit of time looking at the renormalization. Okay, now, if you do it right, it brings out actually two additional factors. Okay, those are the counterterms. But there are ways that you can move them over to the left-hand side, as we usually do, and it becomes these three constants, the cosmological constant and alpha beta. They are multiplied to these geometric objects, and in fact, there are three of them, but because of the existence of Gauss' Bonnet theorem, there are only two independent variables. So for semi-classical gravity, it's not automatically sort of extended. It's extended the original structure to incorporate the so-called R-square terms. This is the Weyl curvature square, and that's the R-square term. There's also the box R, but as I said, those three terms are related by the Gauss-Bonnet identity in four dimensions, at least. But of course, the limits to the semi-classical gravity that also commanded our attention for quite a while. Below the Planck energy, we believe it's valid, meaning that the measurement time interval, length interval, is much greater than the Planck time or the Planck scale. And we usually ignore the quantum fluctuations of stress tensor. Okay, that is within the context of semi-classical gravity. And of course, it's the dissatisfaction with that, at least, that led me and quite a few of us to push a little bit further, meaning looking at fluctuations properly, okay, and finding ways to incorporate fluctuations into the Einstein equation. So schematically, let's just review, that's just the Einstein equation without that. That's the quantum expectation value of the stress energy tensor. And here's the massive scalar field, as I just showed you earlier. So I just want to show you that is, of course, what we discussed in the 80s. Now, stochastic gravity has that classical term, which, of course, that's general relativity. And here, that's, of course, the expectation value. So if you just add these two terms, that's semi-classical gravity. In addition to that, there's a stochastic term. Okay, you might wonder, why can't you just add a term into an equation like that? That certainly was my question. Okay, where could one even think about, first of all, dissipative effect, which is on this side? And at that time, in the late 70s, I actually was a postdoc here with Jim. We were working on these back reaction, Professor Hartle, problems, and we've understood at least how dissipation entered. Okay. But here is one step further, okay? It's fluctuation, okay? And for most of you, you know that there's actually a balance between fluctuation and dissipation, okay? So that would come up a little bit later. So the question is that here's a new stochastic term. I just put it in by hand? No. There's a way for it to see it, okay? So how could quantum field give rise to a stochastic source? That's what I was alluding to. It took me quite a number of years to come to terms with the fact that you could actually talk about stochastic source without any kind of ad hoc assumption. Why do I say that? Okay, at least for me, the education of non-equilibrium is complete void, okay? I think today is still like that, even for graduate studies, okay? I think it's a big mistake, okay? When I was at Maryland teaching undergraduate thermodynamics, I struggled for quite a few years and made it a required course, but that's only equilibrium thermodynamics, okay? Now, here, the stochasticity actually can be shown to be So what I was referring to is that when we usually see a Langevin equation, our teacher would say, well, let's just add a white noise source on the right-hand side, okay? And then it goes on. I'm not very happy with that, okay? Why can't you just add one, and why is it always white? As it turns out, if you start out with a closed system, certainly, you know, a quantum system is described as unitary and is described by Schrodinger equation, whatever equation you like, operators with Heisenberg picture. And there's only through the open system, meaning that you are carving it into two parts, starting with two subsystems, okay? And then you allow subsystem B to have many degrees of freedom, and you start coarse-graining it, that some of these features would arise, okay? So then I realized that, well, Feynman is actually in the very last chapter of his book that we usually try to learn path integral, and after we've learned it, we just throw the book away. If you go back there, it goes on, and that's the 5-minute learning. Okay, at least I learned a lot from that. I remember once Bryce would talk to me. He said, "Well, it's all very nice, all this, but do we really need this statistical concept?" I said, "I found it very useful. Okay, you don't need it. We actually don't need it. As I'll show you in the next slide, it's really just a two-point function of TMUDU. Okay, but I found it very useful. At least there's a very vivid physical picture behind what we're doing. Okay, of course we all know that you just go to higher-order correlation functions, you would be able to incorporate most of the information. But at least here now, we know what kind of information we've thrown away. And that, to me, is actually more important than what you keep, this thing that's familiar here. So the C is the stochastic term. It certainly is a functional of the background metric. Here's the same equation again. I'm just specializing it to a perturbed background, as because we will be using that for the cosmological perturbation and structure formation discussion. Okay, so the noise kernel is nothing more than just the expectation value, quantum expectation value of the energy momentum tensor two-point function. So it's a bitensor, x and y, in these two space-time points. And we've also defined this to take in the trace out, out from there. So it's the traceless part of that. And now, at this point, okay, I'm just telling you that there is a stochastic tensor source, okay, classical stochastic tensor source, and it obeys this equation. This is the correlation function, of course, of the noise source. Okay, I need to spend maybe two or three slides to just point out to you the connection between the quantum field, okay, and the classical stochastic tensor source. There's no more and no less. It's just another way of looking at the system. But it's a very useful way to look at it, especially in dealing with dissipated systems and fluctuating systems. Now, so this is the new boy in town, so to speak. Okay, so we really need to take a close look at it. And thanks to the nice work of Enric Verdiger and his students in the mid-90s onwards, they've shown that this noise kernel actually has some very nice properties. Well, it's real, positive, semi-definite, as a consequence of stress energy tensor being self-adjoint. Okay, this is the expression I just show you. Okay, and this is the way how we introduce a stochastic average. Okay, so I will show you a little bit later on how that stochastic average is defined through a Gaussian functional identity. courtesy, of course, thanks to the Feynman-Vernon treatment. So it's also covariantly conserved in the background space-time, so it's a solution of the semi-classical Einstein equation. And for a conformal field, it is traceless, because at that time we're worrying, this new animal in town, okay, is it going to ruin all the nice things that we have, okay? For example, is it going to add something to the trace anomaly? That is a big no-no, of course. But everything seems to check out quite well. It's covariantly conserved and all that. So it's only after that that we started promoting it to a term in what we call the Einstein-Langevin equation. I think I could use 1 minute to show this. So this is the way that I tried to understand this in the early 90s through the open system. So the system here could be your metric, in this case it's the perturbation, linear perturbation, and the quantum field is considered as the environment. The influence function null, or the influence action here, is basically the object that captures all the influences on the system due to the environment. That's why at the end you only have the system variable. And these are rather complicated objects. This is sometimes called the dissipation kernel. It's actually just that part is called the dissipation kernel. And this is the noise kernel. The anti-symmetric, the symmetric symmetrization product of those two. So this is characteristic. As I said, I mean, what I did was actually I have to go back to quantum Brownian motion and understand the structure. It's actually rather a general structure, as long as you keep to Gaussian, okay, systems. And in fact, the case that Feynman Vernon and many other people analyzed, those are bilinear couplings. And things simplify to the extent that you could really define a noise, and that's through this identity, the integral identity. Remember this term, this is the anti-anti, and that's the noise kernel. This is identical, that you can introduce a stochastic sourcing term, classical, okay, with N being the noise kernel that I showed you a couple of slides ago. So this is, you can now replace this term in the earlier slide by that term. And the measure there is what provides the stochastic averaging. Okay, so there's no cheating of any sort. It's really an identity, but that enables us, as I said, to write down what's known as the Einstein-Langevin equation after proving that the noise kernel really has all these nice properties. Certainly, I mean, anybody who wants to sit in that place need to obey all those conditions that I just mentioned. Okay, so that was derived in 1994, quite some time ago. Let me just quickly show you the solution, the general sort of structure of the solution to Einstein-Langevin equations. This is just the H medium, of course, that's the retarded Green function, right? The two indices, well, four indices, A, B, and then C, D. Multiply, that's the sourcing term, remember. Okay, so this is the ordinary so Green function equation. For the two-point function x and y here, we, of course, then have two of these Green functions with the noise kernel sandwiched in between. Why do I want to show this? Because before this, most of the discussions, people have been focusing on intrinsic fluctuations, meaning at the initial slicing, you allow for the force fluctuations to develop, and you, in fact, put it into an equation, and they grow in time, in cosmology. But in most cases, the induced fluctuations, induced meaning it's induced from the fluctuations of the quantum matter field. That is new, and it's certainly the centerpiece in stochastic gravity. Another important sort of theorem or lemma was proven by Esteban Albert Rohrer and Enrique. And this is very useful because to the leading order in large N, they've shown that these stochastic correlation functions reproduce the quantum correlation functions. Okay? So this is what enables us to do some of these quantum problems with stochastic methods. So let me just mention a few areas for the application of stochastic gravity, and then I'll use the remaining 5 minutes to point out to you the application, to show you the application to cosmological perturbations. The validity of semi-classical gravity, you do need both of these, to consider both of these terms, intrinsic and induced fluctuations, to examine the stability of any solution to the semi-classical Einstein equation. And then you can actually, since this is really the platform to study fluctuations of the geometry. So in fact, space-time foam and all those, I don't want to use big names, even though that actually was what attracted me from Wheeler's woodcut, Japanese woodcut about these space-time foam in studying general relativity and quantum gravity. But this is the Einstein-Langevin equation is indeed, to my knowledge, a platform where you can quantify some of these ideas that we talked about, metric fluctuations, space transforms, and so on. Starting with the simplest, which is Minkowski space, and looking at the metric fluctuations therein. Black hole fluctuations, that certainly is a very important area. What happens? Does the fluctuation grow? And would it affect the evolution of the time-dependent black hole together with the Hawking radiation with back reaction included? So that, of course, is a big challenge for almost 30 years, if not more, and structure formation. This is sort of a personal thing. I'm also trying to use that as a platform towards quantum gravity, and my definition of quantum gravity is it's a theory of microscopic structure of space-time, not just quantizing the classical variables in general relativity. it's n weak. But depends on how you count it, right? If you just count the graviton part, it's really just a leading order. So Jim and Gary Horowitz, in quite early on in the early 80s, already show that the leading order large N, where N is the number of matter fields, gives you semi-classical gravity. So this is logical, it's the next leading order. In that counting, in that way of counting, will give you stochastic gravity. This is, Andre already talked about that, his famous chaotic inflation. That's the... No. It has these fluctuations. No, that's the key. That's the whole point, right? If you don't go that high, you only get the mean value. Yeah. We know very well, I mean, with all the 2pi and all that. So here's, of course, the about invariable, the phi and psi, and the Einstein equation takes that form, the zeroth order, the background, and the first order linear perturbations. I want to show you this equation. That, you remember, is really the TMU, the trace list, stress energy tensor two-point function. And that, of course, is what gives rise to the noise kernel. You can start with this. It's phi phi, and then script phi is the perturbation, quantized perturbation of the background space-time G, okay, metric G. And correspondingly, you have phi square, curly phi square, and then this is the quadratic term. In this talk so far, this is the linear term. I just want to show you, this is the result of Albert Rohrer and Eric Zediger, that it reproduces, stochastic gravity reproduces exactly, no more and no less, what you get in the usual method of quantizing linear gravitational perturbations. But the challenge is, how do you include this in the quantized linear gravitational perturbation if you want a second order? Okay? These are operators. So you might want to think about, you know, product expansion and all that, but it's not so easy, so straightforward, if we think in the conventional way of trying to do quantized linear perturbation and going up to second order, because at most you're just taking the product of that. You're not really getting the two-point function, the correlation in the two-point function. But with stochastic gravity, with this translation, at least under the Gaussian approximation, you can do that. Okay, so I'll just show you these equations. This is the G, the Einstein tensor on this side. The phi and psi variables, you can work in the gauge where phi is equal to psi. This is the noise term. Okay, now you can reduce that, as I just said, and you can work out the retarder propagator for the metric perturbations. It ends up with that term. So there are two unknowns, the metric perturbation and the expectation value of the quantum operator of the inflow perturbations, that's the script phi hat here, on the metric, which means that you have to solve the semi-classical Einstein equation. But because of the Deontian identity, which is preserved, that's the important part, by the noise term, the stochastic source there, so you actually have two equations for two unknowns, and it reduces down to this equation. For most of us who've read Slava's review, that is their equation 6.48. Okay, I just want to show you that this is identical. Now, this you should start thinking. Well, you start out with a non-local, right? Because all these dissipation kernels, they are all non-local. How come this equation nobody ever thought about non-locality in there? Second, where's the stochasticity? The bottom line is that it's all because of linearity that you don't see that. Now, in Fourier space, of course, non-local terms in integral differential equation, this is what you will get always in the open system. When you're honest in including back reaction, you always get an integral differential equation. Okay? This is from the very first lesson in non-equilibrium system mechanics. Schwarzschild said, use a projection operator. You have not thrown out any information. You just recast it into an equation incorporating the subsystem B dynamics, which makes the subsystem A equation an integral differential equation. Okay? The key here is that those terms in this, right, that's the background, perturbed background space-time, there is exact cancellation in this particular case. Also, for the stochastic source, because the solution to Einstein equation satisfies constraint equation at the initial time, it actually has a stochastic dependence, but it's really only just on the initial conditions. So one could carry on and solve that, and the solution, I don't need to repeat this, you all know that. So let me just summarize the main features. Stemming counter gravity depends on the expectation value of the quantum stress tensor, but it fails when the fluctuation of quantum stress tensor becomes large. Stochastic gravity incorporates these fluctuations at the Gaussian level, but you can actually go beyond Gaussian, except you can no longer use the Feynman-Wernicke Gaussian integral. At one time, I was struggling with it. It becomes a moment-generating functional. You can still call them noise, but it gets to be more and more interesting and more intricate for a good reason, because it's no longer noise per se. It has its own life. And of course, you need to incorporate a little bit more of the moment-generating high moment in there. But in this case, it goes through the fluctuations are incorporated through the noise kernel, and they act as source for the Einstein-Langevin equation. Stochastic two-point metric correlations agree with quantum two-point metric correlations to order large n in large n expansion. And finally, for the application to a cosmological perturbation problem, there is complete agreement with linear perturbation approach, but one could go beyond the linear order. And what is that? One example is Stravinsky's 1990 inflation, wherein it is driven by the trace anomaly, which of course is from the R-square type of Lagrangian. That's all, thank you.
Hello, Dr. Hu. Can you use this approach of the fluctuations of the inflaton in order to generate entropy?
A fluctuation of what?
Can you use this approach for fluctuations of the inflaton via this method in order to entropy generation?
You mean inflaton? Yeah. Of course, I mean, this whole program, right? You can, let me separate it in two parts, right? If you're referring to entropy generation in the reheating, you can use the core of this, which is really the closed time path integral formalism, okay, together with 2pi. We tried that with Stephen Ramsey in 97 around that time, but it's only to the leading order. Jürgen and his student and the whole school pushed much further, okay, and you can see some new non-trivial physical feature in there. And of course, that calculation gives you the reheating and the entropy. It's basically a conversion from vacuum energy to radiation energy, let's say. Okay? So the core of that is similar, but in here we're dealing more with the Planck scale processes, okay? Like the fluctuations which seeded the structure later on. Yeah, it's all in that noise term, okay? That's a fluctuation, and you can do a lot of things in there, which of course you can use the Green function, the retarded Green function, to propagate these noise sources.
Well, some of it was in your talk, but can you say again, what happens if you integrate out the stochastic term?
That's right. Okay. I forgot to mention that. Thank you for mentioning that. Now, you might wonder, why is there an extra term there? The thing is, if you take the Einstein-Langevin equation and take the stochastic average, you get back the semi-classical Einstein equation, because the C, stochastic average, is equal to zero. But that is the situation in most fluctuation considerations. Yeah. So in a mean field theory, so in that sense, semi-classical Einstein equation is really just a mean field theory, whereas the stochastic gravity incorporates fluctuations. I'm particularly interested in that because critical phenomena, this is something that we need. I mean, the mean field just doesn't show in many cases. The integrated out. No. Okay. So when I mentioned in the influence functional, you integrate out, it's just in quotes, okay, the environmental variables. It's not even just stochastic gravity. Any quantum open system is like that. By that, we don't mean dropping everything, but there's an overall influence of the environmental variables, which usually has a lot more than your system variable, and getting the average effect on the system. usually it induces dissipation. Okay, and but there's one way you can check, because you're not doing violence to it, you're not putting anything by hand, because the noise term, the fluctuation and the dissipation actually obey a fluctuation-dissipation relation. That is really the tightest, you know, check for any of this calculation. So you know that, and that relation actually comes from the fact that they all came from a closed system, which has unitarity.
Okay, last question.
So you said that the temporal or non-local terms, which might appear, the various terms cancel with each other. And do you have any simple symmetry argument why those are canceled?
Right.
Exactly?
Yeah, I just said that it's basically because this is a linearity situation. And the non-local, okay, so the non-local term, as I said earlier, would generically appear in any quantum open system. Any back reaction of subsystem B on the subsystem A would have non-local terms in them. But in this case, the noise kernel, okay, actually captures all those contributions from different pieces in that equation, okay, and that all settle down and cancel each other. It's mainly because of the linearity, okay. If you depart from that, you have to deal with non-local terms. But that's what's interesting and new to that.
Okay, let's stop the session and thank Baylor for his talk. Mm-hmm.